first half, second half, it's like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best foot for money, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together. Putting the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Oi, Rapid supporters. You're listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. This is your old mate, Matty P. It's Wednesday, July 17th, 2019. Harry Kane's two stops short of West Ham. Chelsea's on the down. Stan Kroenke still ain't opened up his pocketbook. And Rabbi Mark Goodman, that young chap Cole Bassett, he could start for Millwall right now, Roy.
Rubbish. Absolute rubbish. Wow, that was a pretty good... It was a little bit East End, but I thought that was a passable accent. Somewhere there's a British listener who will hear us and subsequently quit the show completely from now on. But other than that, it was pretty...
Yeah, we lost Richard Fleming right now.
Yeah, because Fleming was listening to the show before now. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing all right. You know, we had a nice little Wednesday period with four games in MLS play. MLS fantasy team doing okay. I'm absolutely getting my butt kicked in the MLS fantasy boss experts. You know, that's what happens when, you know, it's 24 guys, straight table, and, you know, we're all in, like, the top 150, where if you don't have an absolutely great week, you know, Ben Bear's going to absolutely kick your butt. So that's been a little bit rough, but team was good. Had a fantastic soccer Saturday over the weekend. I don't know if you saw, Mark, but I was with our mutual colleague and friend Richard Terry. We went down to the Colorado Springs Switchbacks game. Kind of a boring match overall. A little bit of rain, almost a lightning delay. But the Switchbacks got out of there with a 1-0 win. Got to see Matt Hundley play in almost full 90 minutes, and he had some really, really good moments. And then, you know, obviously went over to a friend's house in the Springs to watch the first half of the Rapids game, caught the radio on the way back driving up north, and then got to go see the friendly on the Monday. How was your Open Cup match against the Rapids' most recent opponent, Portland Timbers, taking on LAFC?
It was a blast. Before we get to that, just a quick mention that I, listeners, will never spend any time talking about my fantasy team, because as much as I love my fantasy team, as much as I love to think about fantasy soccer, I once read and completely agree the most boring thing that any human being can ever do is try to engage other human beings and talk about their fantasy team. Nobody cares, Matt. Nobody cares. And by the way, I finished 23rd in the extra time league last week and sixth. Sixth in the of all Colorado Rapids supporters last week in fantasy MLS. And, dear listeners, I know that you don't care, so I'm not going to talk about it. Anyhow, I was in Los Angeles, the homeland for, you know, this is the weirdest podcast ever, Matt, because both of us, born and raised in Los Angeles, root for Colorado, and I don't even live in the Denver metropolitan area anymore. Shout out Pittsburgh. But anyways, I was back in the homeland to ferry the grandchildren to their grandparents, because my mom does not care. Although while I was in L.A., Matt, I did, because, you know, the house in which I was raised is slowly decaying and falling apart, and there's just junk everywhere. So I just I'm starting to take apart one by one and piece by piece all of the vestiges of my youth. So I scurried away about, you know, 75 comic books from my collection. So every time I go out, I'll be, you know, taking a vintage toy like an Optimus Prime, or you know, getting a couple comic books or some baseball cards out of the house. So anyways, more importantly, I did get to slip away on Wednesday to go to a US Open Cup game between LAFC and Portland. Total bonker balls match, absolutely wall-to-wall crazy. I was blown away by the fact that Giovanni Savarese, or actually the assistant coach who stood in for him, since Savarese was back in Italy tending to his father, who subsequently passed away. The Timbers went toe-to-toe in L.A. against LAFC. It was the boldest attacking setup I'd ever seen. They did not bunker and counter. They did not sit back. They did not wait for anything. They just matched up player for player, mano a mano for all 90 minutes, and it was a heck of a game. And then it was 0-0. It was one of the most exciting 0-0 games I've ever seen. And then in like the 88th minute, Portland stole a goal, just a surprise kind of out of nowhere goal, and sent LAFC fans home crushed, including my own son, who decided to be an LAFC fan for the night. The other thing that was cool about it, Matt, was I did something very un Los Angelino, which was
you got to
my
the game on time.
Even that's true. We got there early, but even crazier than that, Matt, my dad was like, "Oh yeah, east-west traffic is going to be a nightmare. Let's drive our car down to the light rail stop and take the train." And was like, "This is my father, who's basically he's lived 63 years in the city of Los Angeles, and like I wasn't even aware that he knew there was a light rail in LA." But we took light rail to the game, and by the way, it was fantastic. It was just like taking public transportation, rail transportation to any other big sporting event where you get on the train and more fans of the team get on and then you wind up having a conversation. And it was a blast. And by the way, that's one of my favorite things about going to a soccer match and or any sporting event, to be honest. And one thing that I lament about a Rapids game that like they don't really have that. You know, they didn't run the A train in Colorado directly into DSGP, and I will forever be grouchy about it.
All right. One other banter topic we have tonight, Mark, before we get to relevant soccer games. We got to talk about the friendly against Arsenal, a 3-0 win for the Gooners, a pretty solid Arsenal crowd on hand. It was kind of hard for me to gauge because you never had that real Rapids goal to where I could compare the noise from one of the three Arsenal goals to the noise from the Rapids standpoint. But, you know, obviously, you know, a solid contingency by both. Thought C38 showed up really decently in the corner. You had, I believe it's Arsenal America, and there was actually a decent showing of what I presume were either possibly British expats, but people who traveled here for the game who were not yeah. Colorado natives, Colorado residents, the usual that you will see at an Arsenal game, you know, at the Bulldog, for example. So that was really, really nice. You had a couple good moments for some of the younger players for the Rapids. Cole Bassett obviously checked an item off of his bucket list as a childhood Gooner himself. And then you got some rotation in the back as well. At one point, you had a couple, Colorado Springs switchbacks players playing up against the poster boys for, Arsenal. I want to say it was the 79th minute. You had a triple substitution of Mesut Ozil, Lacazette, and then Aubameyang subbing in, as well. You know, some decent moments. Nicky Jackson, played almost a full 70 minutes, I believe, and, you know, had some good moments in there, but you know, a defeat, but I don't think a score line that anybody from the Rapids standpoint, given the players and how the team was looking, were going to complain about that. I think overall a nice moment for the fans, and for the first time ever, Mark, I did get to meet Jared Thorenbow, one of our intrepid listeners and residents in the state of Utah, actually, for the match. So shout out to Jared. Thank you for hitting me up on Twitter and then telling me where your seats were so we could chat at halftime. So, you know I'm normally a curmudgeon when it comes to this, Mark, but the scoreline wasn't super embarrassing. There was a decent showing of Rapids fans. It did not feel like I was sitting literally in a smaller version of the Emirates for the entire 90 minutes. And for me, at least, most importantly, nobody got hurt. So mission accomplished.
Yeah. I mean, there's a bigger philosophical question that I think is worth engaging in, Matt, which is like, the standard narrative of MLS fans and writers about a game like this is the so-called cash grab, that this is just an opportunity to fill your stadium. For Stan Kroenke, this is an obvious slam dunk KSC event in the sense that you can get one of your properties to play against one of your other properties and just generate straight cash, homie, out of the whole thing. But Matt, I ask you, and I'll weigh in on my own, you know, I think a second aspect and an important aspect for me as a person who believes in hashtag grow the game is the question, does this game convert EPL snobs, EPL fans to folks who might potentially watch an MLS game? Is that a reasonable thing, or am I deluding myself into believing that those folks are ever going to switch over and believe that MLS is worth watching?
There is an alternate universe, Mark, where all of the sales departments for every single MLS team are completely open, or I would say as open as MLS can possibly be as far as how we get salary information, how we get roster rules and regulations, and we're able to use precedent from a few other specific cases in order to sort of connect the dots and gradually, you know, in a very, what's the movie with, the professor at Princeton and he has the mental condition, Beautiful Mind, for example, sort of reverse engineer the MLS roster rules, but do that from a sales standpoint. I would totally love if anybody at KSC is listening to this right now, this time next year, let me walk in. I will do this entirely off the record. I won't even report on it. I want the list of all the first time either email registrations or the game against Arsenal, right, the friendly, was, yes, a first contact of this is the first, yes, time you bought something from a Rapids game. We have your contact info in some capacity. They, you, right, know, were auto-checked onto some mailing list for information about the team, and I would, right, want to know by this time next year, July 17, 2020, have they purchased at least one single game ticket for a Rapids home game? Have they purchased any merchandise? And if you have any, like, MailChimp or info to, have they unsubscribed from the mailing list? Are they auto-clicking red? Is it showing up in their spam? Anything like that. I would love to see that. And we can filter out the, you know, say the ones for credit card information that say were from out of state. But just for people who were in Denver, who had a Colorado address, who bought, who showed up for that game and bought tickets for that game, and that was your first contact point for the Rapids, what, if any, communication or purchases have they made from the club in the 12 months since? Because I think that's the big data point that we're honestly missing there, Mark. And Don Garber has been pretty on the record about this as far as MLS's surveying and everything, that the one way guaranteed to get Euro snobs to watch MLS teams is have the MLS teams play those Euro snob clubs. So whether it's the international friendlies individually set up by clubs or the ICC, for example, you got the League Cup coming up and Champions Cup. So a few Liga MX versus MLS opportunities as well. You know, Atlanta's having that game against Club America in a couple of weeks, but I don't think that we have enough data from that standpoint. I think in a very MLS way, it's kind of been learning in real time as we're collecting the data in those instances. So when it was just, you know, let's just move the MLS team to the local NFL stadium or the big stadium that we have in the market and then pick one of the big six or one of the Champions League regulars, one of the big powers, and then everybody's just going to go there from a spectacle standpoint or almost in a touristy dynamic, I think that's very different from how the ICC is being managed, from how individual clubs are setting up the friendlies, and certainly how the Rapids are setting that up. So there's been iterative learning along the way in terms of how to make these a viable event, how to set them up such that they go off without a hitch, how to make them more financially profitable, but then also a way to coerce those fans in. And I'm still kind of the belief, Mark, that until we get to the point where either MLS players are being more, MLS as a league is becoming a feeder league to those main, the big four in Europe, I don't think we're going to see a bump. And really, I think it's going to take quality players, you know, at that level, either competing with to where they're as good in MLS as they are in a Premier League or other players coming over here. It's no doubt that David Beckham showed up in MLS and immediately they got a bump for Euro snobs in America and obviously the actual Euro snobs in place. There's no doubt in my mind that English supporters, either in the United States or somewhere in the British Isles, turned an eye towards MLS when Wayne Rooney started with DC United and obviously has been playing very well since then. I don't have a good sense. We don't have a lot of data to support for or against the concept that, you know, if the Rapids play Arsenal this year and then they play Chelsea next year and just, you know, what are the four biggest European clubs that are supported, you know, at the Bulldog, individual supporters groups, local pub relationships for individual watch parties, that necessarily is going to convert a Euro snob who's never set foot at Dixt into being a Rapids fan or at the very least paying attention a little bit more to MLS. I think that's the great experiment, and I think we're learning about that, and we're going to get more information as we get more data points, and that data becomes available at least internally to MLS or internally to the Rapids just as much as, you know, now we know You know, Dix was built in 2007, and in, you know, a little over a decade since then, we have a way better understanding of how to build a class act soccer Civic Stadium, have it change a club to where now Dix, in all honesty, is a little bit outdated compared to what LAFC has, what Allianz Field has. And I think the events like what happened on Monday are a data point that's going to be a learning point for the league and teams to do those better, in the same way that some of the more suburban, you know, appealing to the soccer family soccer-specific stadiums were a data point upon which now FC Cincy Stadium in a couple of years is going to be off the hook.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting take. I think I agree with 90% of what you said. It's a good question as to whether those people can ever be converted. I have friends and I know people who are, and I've had conversations with folks who are, they just fundamentally believe that anything below English Premier League soccer or maybe Spain is just unwatchable. It's just unacceptably not good enough for them. And they only want to watch the best, and they're spoiled by it, which blows me away because, you know, it's like saying, I will only eat filet mignon. I will never, ever touch a hamburger. Mm-hmm. You know, God forbid I ever eat a cut of beef that doesn't cost at least $35 a pound. That's an insane principle that, like, the only time I ever imbibe alcohol, it's Veuve Clichot or Clicquot or Dom Perignon. Like, mm-hmm. It's got to be the best or it's rubbish, like, to go all British on us.
Yeah, no, I
fundamentally don't believe it, but obviously I feel that way because A, I support Major League Soccer, but B, I have coached U8 soccer. Like, of course I think, you know, bad football is fun and worth watching, and decent football is fun and worth watching, and good football is fun and worth watching, and exceptional football is fun and worth watching.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Mark. I think there's a certain percentage of that group that MLS is never going to win over. Or in order for MLS to do that, MLS needs to supersede the Premier League. You know, like, these are the same people who, if they watch American sports, for example, the only college basketball they watch is Duke or North Carolina, or they only watch, you know, Ohio State or Alabama football, or, you know, they're only paying attention really to the NBA finals and maybe a couple of those marquee matchups that you get on, like, Tuesday through Thursday night. And, you know, half of those were the Lakers this year when the Lakers were absolutely garbage, and God forbid we have to watch the Denver Nuggets because the Denver Nuggets aren't the Golden State Warriors. So those people I don't think you can win over. I think the American-based fans, or I would say, you know, natural American citizens, or who grew up in the U.S., who discovered soccer through FIFA or through watching, you know, NBC, you know, Premier League Sunday and Saturday mornings, I think those people they can appeal to if they show the quality or some emotional connection to the local geography, or just, you know, try to entice them in some other way. And in order for that to happen, there has to be that initial, let's actually watch a game and see something. And it could be something as simple as watching a single play, just as it was with you, Mark, seeing Lee Wynn with a nice little dribbly moment with the New England Revolution, and that was a way to get you hooked. I mean, it's in the bio section for the articles I put up on Last Word. I see it every single week. So those moments have to happen, but you don't have those moments if you don't get those people in the front door. And if the only way to get them in the front door is to say, hey, you're an Arsenal fan. Arsenal is playing for the first time ever in Colorado, and they might not be back here for another 10 years. You need to go to this game, even though tickets are $120. That's a way to start. How you actually connect all those dots all the way to somebody buying a scarf, getting a season ticket package, you know, watching these games regularly on ESPN Plus is still something that I think individual teams in markets and the league as a whole is figuring out. But this is another data point, and hopefully that leads to iterative learning to where the next friendly that the Rapids have is miles better than the Boca Junior friendly of yesteryear.
Let's send this podcast straight to Don Garber and ask him to employ both of us as the heads of strategic marketing for Major League Soccer. Not because we said anything brilliant, but because we had a few brilliant thoughts, and clearly we're at least as qualified as the folks in New York at MLSsoccer.com headquarters.
Moving on to things that are actually relevant, Mark. Listeners, this past Saturday at Providence Park, the newly renovated Providence Park, the Colorado Rapids played the Portland Timbers to a 2-2 draw. Some interesting lineup changes for the Rapids. Jack Price not available again for this game with a foot injury, and obviously Kellen Acosta injured as well. So you have the same back four, Tim Howard and goal, but then it was Danny Wilson and Cole Bassett in the double pivot. And then you had Jonathan Lewis back for the first time with the Burgundy Boys. At a left winger standpoint. And then you also had at least the big highlight for me, even before he came into the game and ultimately got the point for the Rapids, Sam Nicholson on the bench and then relieving Andre Shinyashiki. A very back and forth affair, Mark, one with lots of great moments for both teams and one with lots of bad moments for both teams. Opening 20 minutes, a little bit cagey, a lot of possession for the Portland Timbers, but nothing in the way of clear-cut chances until the 27th minute when Tommy Smith lets in possibly the own goal of the season, at least the own goal of the year for the Rapids, you know, with a thumping header that if he had scored this on the Timbers, we'd be talking about it as goal of the week and one of the highlight reel opportunities for the Rapids for the season. Just a mistimed header, and Lala Sabubakar was right there. Maybe it was a miscommunication, and Tommy Smith thumps it into the side netting and then falls to the ground and immediately realizes, oh crap, I did a bad thing. 1 minute later, Jonathan Lewis scores off of Kai Kamara whipping in a pass and then getting the ball into a good position with numbers, and Jonathan Lewis takes advantage of an errant clearance on a header by a center back from the Portland Timbers. Not a whole lot in the second half, but I think overall, the Rapids lucky to be at 1-1, but also a little bit unfortunate. You had a couple good opportunities, especially I want to say it was the 34th minute when you had Andre Shinyashiki, you know, effectively on a one-timer from Jonathan Lewis that Steve Clark saves, and then there's a follow-up header on that play from Kai Kamara. Kamara could have had a brace in the first half, Mark. Then it was a PK opportunity for Diego Valeri in the 63rd minute off of a hand in an unnatural position from Lala Sabubakar, who was battling with someone that was after a 55-minute red card to Julio Cascante for a scissors tackle. Definitely violent conduct on Kai Kamara. Kamara lucky to not be injured in that one. At that point, the Rapids are up a man, but also down a goal. Similar situation against the Portland Timbers, but no snow in this one. And then substitute Sam Nicholson comes in. Great diagonal ball by Danny Wilson. Nicholson dribbles with it, gets around his defender, cuts inside, and then an absolute laser on the off foot in the 76th minute. The Rapids had the better of the play in the final 15 for me, Mark, but ultimately weren't able to get something. I think fairly but chaotically a 2-2 draw. Mark Goodman, what was your good thing from this game against the Portland Timbers?
Wow. I just really liked... there were a lot of things I liked about this game. I like, you know, I mentioned that when Portland played LAFC, they kind of went toe to toe. I thought that the Rapids, except for some shakiness in the first 15 minutes, also went toe to toe, that it was a very even game. They did not kind of do the bunker encounter as much, although they did, to some degree cede possession to Portland, which is natural to the team that is at home. I thought Sam Vines played very well at left back. I think he is coming into his own, becoming comfortable. There was that first goal was just beautifully worked and really well done. Very quick, very it was like you put players in Rondo or 5v2 and just said, do that, but move it down the field. And I really enjoyed that. And then there's one last thing that I really want to highlight. Maybe I'm stealing away from my big thing, which I don't really know what it's going to be at this point. But I thought that there was a tactical adaptation that I'm not sure anybody else I've spoken to or heard from mention, which is that Connor Casey put the team in effectively a 4-1-4-1 formation, and he put Danny Wilson between the lines as that lone defensive midfielder, which basically meant that if a Portland player wandered into that space between the lines where a lot of soccer players, especially attacking soccer players, are very dangerous, Wilson picked them up and neutralized them. So that meant that Sebastian Blanco or Brian Fernandez or anybody who kind of wandered like Diego Valeri into that zone got picked up and neutralized. I felt like this was Connor Casey and his team of coaches watching a lot of film between matches in the past week and saying, you know, our regular setup isn't going to work here. The way to neutralize his team is to do this. And I thought that the ability to be flexible and adapt tactically to the opponent was heartening, was exciting. It didn't exactly work, of course, because we didn't emerge with a win. But to be frank and maybe a little bit tough, I don't think Anthony Hudson would have ever done that. I don't think Anthony Hudson believed in adjusting tactics for the opposing team to the degree that Connor Casey displayed that you should in this game. And I thought all those things were good things. Honestly, I walk away from this game thinking that A, Portland is, and basically after having seen how Portland played against LAFC in the Open Cup, feeling like Portland is a very good team. The Rapids went toe-to-toe with them and played very well against them, and I thought it was heartening all around. Matt, what are your thoughts on this match? Your good things.
I want to start with the wing play. That's something that I've been hyping up, you know, really since Connor Casey took over. You know, Jonathan Lewis back for his first match, you know, starting since the Gold Cup call-up, and didn't really get a lot of opportunities, but also didn't really miss a beat other than not playing the full 90 minutes. You know, I was overall impressed with him. Or did he get subbed out? He was subbed out in the 87th minute for Dylan Serna. So, you know, we've talked about how he's probably the second most important attacking piece for this Rapids team other than Kai Kamara, and I thought he was absolutely fantastic, and he thrived in that atmosphere in which I want to guess is probably his first start at Providence Park. So I thought he was fantastic. You know, I think Andre Shinyashiki has gradually improved as well. You know, he could have had, you know, a goal there, especially, you know, Steve Clark had arguably three saves that were save of the week candidates in MLS play. And obviously Kai Kamara was fantastic. And I know there's been some concerns with Sam Nicholson. You know, he finally got over the back injury and then, you know, was, you know, for 2 or 3 weeks there had the dreaded questionable hamstring situation, which, you know, could be approaching like, you know, Jermaine Jones level. If he's questionable and a week away for 3 to 4 months, and then if he tweaks the hamstring once more, then he's out for the rest of the season. So good to see him get some playing time. Good to see him play well independent of the goal, and then also to get the goal that was fantastic. I know in the past, Mark, I have been an apologist for Tommy Smith and for Jack Price, and I think it's time for me to probably do that with Danny Wilson. Danny Wilson has quietly just done whatever the club has asked of him since getting benched from the center back position earlier this year. I still don't feel super great about him, Mark, but I've got a working theory. I think he is this Rapids equivalent of Bagio Husidic. Follow me on this one here, Mark, where there's one or two things that he's just fine at. He's not going to do anything special, but if you just want him to roam in that middle area, at time be a second center back, don't make any critical mistakes, away from goal, support the center backs, and then occasionally ping a ball to get the Rapids out of a bad defensive situation and into a good offensive situation, he is just fine. If you want him to be the more number 8 in that double pivot, if you want him to have to run with anybody, if you want him to have to man mark an individual player like a Diego Valeri or a Sebastian Blanco, he is absolutely going to fail. But if you want to give him one simple task to do for the whole 90 minutes, another slightly more complicated task to do a few times a game, and maybe one other thing just to do once, and he is your fifth best midfielder in that 4-2-3-1 there, then he's, and everybody else does their job, he's absolutely going to be fine. If you ask him to do anything else, he can single-handedly lose the game for you. But in this game, in the game at home against LAFC, in which he scored on the set piece, I think the Rapids and Connor Casey have finally found a scenario where Danny Wilson can be on the field for 90 minutes and be in the right situation where he can play well, he can contribute to the team, and he cannot single-handedly lose the team the game.
Wow.
Is he a center back for the Rapids? Absolutely not. Is he a 90 minutes out and out week-to-week starter for me? No. For the role that he's playing, is he worth a TAM-level contract with another guaranteed year after this season and an international roster spot? No. But if Danny Wilson was your Bagio Husidic making $110,000 base salary, no performance incentives, I would have absolutely no complaints about what we've seen from Danny Wilson from the past 6 weeks. But where I think this is critical for me, Mark, is Connor Casey in bringing in Lalas Abubakar Kakar and changing a few other things, found a way for Tommy Smith to be a functional contributor to this team. I think Jack Price, prior to the injury, was a functional contributor to this team. This was something that Anthony Hudson had an entire year and another offseason to try and figure out. He could not get that out of Tommy Smith for any extended stretch of time other than as an offensive set piece contributor. He never got that out of Danny Wilson, and there were a couple, maybe, you know, two separate 8-week stretches in which he got that out of Jack Price. Connor Casey has found a way to get productivity and efficiency out of some of the players that were absolute dead weight under Anthony Hudson, and it is contributing to this team being a little bit more successful. Let's move on to bad thing, Mark. I'm going to start with this one just because you kind of highlighted on it, where I agree with you that the Rapids had a couple of stretches where they were the better team. They had plenty of fantastic moments to where at halftime I could have argued three different bounces of the ball, and instead of being 1-1, the Rapids are up 2-0 comfortably in this game. So I think there were a lot of really good moments. There were a lot of really bad moments, you know, obviously two critical defensive mistakes that effectively gifted Portland goals on this one. You know, other than that one chance for Brian Fernandez that he had headed after, I think it was 2-2 that Tim Howard saved pretty easily. You didn't get a lot of opportunities for the Portland Timbers, and in that, that was just kind of old school Rapids from earlier this season, where they make two critical mistakes and immediately get punished for them. One of them, the own goal. One of them, the PK by Lalas Abubakar. So this team is still capable of making mistakes that can single-handedly lose the game, but they've now figured out things, whether it's Connor Casey, whether it's some of the new acquisitions, players being a little bit more efficient, like the Danny Wilsons and the Tommy Smiths, they're still able to overcome them and get a result. I sent out a tweet from Rapids 96 podcast asking what people were thinking, and a lot of it was collective disappointment. I'm going to spin this a little bit more, Mark, where depending on a couple bounces of the ball, you could have had a 3-0 victory for the Rapids. You could have had a 3-0 loss for the Rapids. Ultimately, the Rapids had some critical mistakes that cost them points, but on the average between those two extremes, I'll take a point in this one.
Yeah, I feel... like, for me, the bad thing in this match is pretty simple, which is Tommy Smith's header own goal in the first half. And that's pretty much it. I mean, there's nothing more to it for me.
Did you see his tweet after the game, though, Mark?
Yes, it was hysterical. Somebody said something along the lines of, this was the goal of the game. And he said, what about mine? You know, like, it was clever. I love Richard Fleming and Marcelo Balboa. I think they do a fantastic job calling the game, and they were trying hard after the goal to figure out, like, what's going on there. Marcelo talks about how I thought they handled it really well, or they theorized it really well, better than you or I could ever do. No offense, dude. But that like, as the defender, you have to be able to recognize that the ball is knuckling on you in a funny way and you have to let it go. But if you've, as Fleming said, if you commit there, you're kind of stuck. Like, once you leap for the ball, you know, like the funny thing with headers is, like, you know, you don't just need to make head contact with it. You need to whip your head into a position where you redirect the ball and you are pushing the ball into the direction you want to. And somehow Tommy Smith jumped into a place where there was, like, nothing he could do with the ball except send it back into his own goal. Like, he couldn't – he somehow, as he turned his head, he put his head into a position where the only possible place he could go was right into goal, as opposed to rising, meeting the goal, hitting it up in the air, or clearing it back from whence it came. Like, but I don't know how that is. Like, maybe he misjudged it or mistimed it. Or he was rising to just get to it, and by the time he got to it, he kind of had this split-second moment of, uh-oh. But I talk about this a lot with defenders for the last couple years when I've been writing and when I've been talking on this podcast, that, like, the trouble with defenders is they're essentially judged for one mistake, right? You could have 55 good moments, good tackles, good interceptions, good clearances, good recoveries, and if you have one oops moment where you get juked left and the player goes right, or if you have one moment where you slide in badly, I mean, you know, Axel Schoberg has two bad moments a game, and that's why
they all lead to goals or red cards or PKs, if not exactly. All three.
And that's why he sits on the bench now. I mean, like, you could get lucky and have one bad moment a game and have it be forgiven because the attacker blows it wide. But the reality is you don't get too many bad moments. You kind of have to be flawless. By the way, to go back to good thing, Keegan Rosenberry essentially in this game was flawless. He had just a wonderful game. But and to your point, you know, Danny Wilson had a very nearly flawless game. He was a very, very good defensive midfielder. He had all the things you want a D-mid to do. Not at the price that you want, but yes. And Tommy Smith made another mistake. He also had a yellow card against Diego Chara in the first half that was dumb and egregious. And he also popped off and got yelly and screamy afterwards. And I got nervous as it was happening and was like, dude, are we going to have another Utah confronting the bench red card situation? Like, you know, Tommy makes little mistakes and I don't really, as much as it was cute what he said after the game, I wasn't really laughing about it.
Yeah.
That was the big thing.
First of all, I want to point out, I think it was the incident you're referring to, I think was against Minnesota last year where he got in it with the opposing bench. Sure. Yeah. And then so just a quota for those of you, we do have a few listeners who like specifically write in and say, I'm not on Twitter. So after the game, Colorado Rapids tweets out, no worry about goal of the week voting this week at MLS. Sam Nicholson's got you covered. And then three, like the almost like an exploding firework or like a gunshot emoji, I think. And then Tommy Smith's response to that, surely I've got a chance. And then it's the sideways laughing with like the teary eyed. So like laughing so hard, your head's tilted and then you're crying emoji on that one. So Tommy Smith has a good sense of humor and is self-aware about that, if nothing else. And Twitter, I think in general, had a really, you know, a healthy response to that as opposed to, I think, the usual Tommy Smith bashing. The big point for me, Mark, is the Portland Timbers are a very good team. They're a very good team at home. This was a vulnerable Timbers team in the sense that they've had an absolute crazy schedule. I think they had between Open Cup and league play, I think they had three back-to-back DGWs, or like they just had an insane schedule going into this game, and in that they were vulnerable. There's good precedent in MLS that a team that starts off on the road, has a stadium renovation, gets some results on the road, which the Timbers did towards the end of that road stretch, move into their new stadium or their renovated stadium, and then effectively wreck ship on the way to making the playoffs. Toronto FC, when they opened up BMO Field and made the playoffs for the first time with Sebastian Giovinco and Michael Bradley. Look at DC United last year with the opening of Audi Field and they hosted a playoff game and everything. I am of the belief that the Portland Timbers will be a playoff team by the end of the season and they will probably host at least one playoff game. And in that, there are going to be a lot of Western Conference teams that go to Providence Park and lose and then get battered and then also probably, you know, get rung up as far as goal differential is concerned. And in a game in which the Rapids were imperfect, in which they made two critical mistakes that gifted the Portland Timbers goals, they ended up getting a point out of this one. This was a game that as soon as that PK happens for Diego Valeri and the Timbers go up 2-1, that's a game that Anthony Hudson's Rapids probably end up losing 3-1 and go out with an absolute whimper in this one. So I'm taking the positive standpoint of the Rapids got a point in a situation where a lot of their playoff competition will ultimately go there and get 0 points the rest of the way. So in that, it's a slight advantage in the Rapids inching towards trying to make the playoffs. What's your big thing, Mark?
The big thing for the rest of the season is what are we? You know, what's going on here? And I think, you know, it's really hard to be in this position of like, should I get excited about maybe the possibility that hopefully there's some sort of chance that we could fall into the final playoff spot? Like, it's not a fun place to be in this, like, you know, what are we, 12th right now or 11th? But we could rise to 8th, which also wouldn't matter, but it'd be nice. But it's better than losing, but it's also kind of irrelevant. Like, this is a weird place to be in. So you kind of enjoy each game, and I think Colorado Rapids supporters are all kind of along for the ride and focused in a way that we weren't when Anthony Hudson was in the dying days of his time with the club. But I very much feel like we're on the fence still about where this club is going. And we've been on the fence with this club for like a month and a half. It's like 6 weeks of like, they're doing really well. Maybe we should have hope, but hope is dangerous and I don't like it. And I'd rather not feel hopeful and then wind up getting kicked in the balls again. That's my thing. Yeah, I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's my big thing.
Yeah, Wanner still has me loaned what we think about when we think about soccer, Mark. And his favorite quote, and I finally got to that in the book, was, it's not the losing that kills you. It's the hope that things will change and then things ultimately not changing that kills you. So on that, listeners, we are currently 20-34 through the 2019 Colorado Rapids season. That mathematically reduces down to 10-17. The Rapids are in 11th in the Western Conference, 9 points below the red line. They have 20 points on their 20 games played, and then I guess an even I don't know what it's called when it's mirrored, but it's a record of 5-10-5. So would that be, is that a palindrome, Mark?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, or is it not a palindrome because digitally it's 5-1-0-5 as opposed to if it was 5-11-5, maybe. In any case, the Rapids have 5 wins, 10 losses, and 5 draws. They have a -9 goal differential, and relevant to their home game this week, they are 4-5-2 at home. They'll be taking on New York City FC, Mark, who are currently 7th, in the Eastern Conference, the last team above the red line. They have 29 points off of 18 games played, a 7-3-8 record with a +9 goal differential and a road record of 3-2-4. New York City FC has kind of similarly had a very up and down season, Mark. They started off absolutely terribly. At one point, leadership from City Football Group was attending a couple of games home and away for NYCFC, and there was thought that Domi Torrent, who took over for Patrick Vieira last summer, was going to be completely on the outs, and then they went on an absolute tear. I think they had, in all competition, 13 games unbeaten, and then just recently had 2 really, really gutty losses. They lost in PKs at Orlando in the U.S. Open Cup in the quarterfinal. That would have been their first semifinal appearance in that tournament, and then they just lost the Hudson River Derby on the weekend on Sunday to New York Red Bulls 2-1 on a very controversial goal from Daniel Royer in the 60th minute. I'm sure you saw this, Mark, where the assistant, the linesman, called a PK, or excuse me, called a corner towards the NYCFC end of play. The head official overruled it and called it a throw-in, relayed that via did not make the over-the-hand throwing motion, relayed that to the headset to the linesman, who then told, I think it was Alex Mule, who took the throw-in. So New York City FC sees the call for a corner, is setting up for a corner with their backs turned to play, while New York Red Bulls are aware that it is a throw-in, take the throw-in quickly, and then all of a sudden Christian is sending it across to Daniel Royer. Alexander Callens isn't realizing what's happening, and then Royer heads the ball in. New York Red Bulls go on to win the game 2-1. This play, by the way, folks, whether something was a corner or a throw-in, not reviewable by VAR, and it was an open play. There were no whistles. I still don't know how to feel about this one, Mark, because I feel like, you know, I'm a very play-to-the-whistle standpoint. If I don't see a whistle, I am always clicked in. I'm also normally a wide player who's not defensively or offensively in my rec league contributing to in the box stuff, so I wouldn't necessarily be setting up of, okay, are we zone, you know, should I be in a particular area, man marking, okay, who's the guy who I'm normally marking, where are they coming up, so to speak. I'm not someone who's marking the back post, I'm someone who's on the outskirts, so I naturally am looking at where the ball actually is, and I would have been a little bit more attentive to that. The players who were in a position to defend the New York Red Bulls throw-in were the players who mentally were setting up for the set piece and everything. Ultimately, New York City ends up losing. So a team that prior to a couple weeks ago, Mark, was on an absolute hot tear, now on a little bit of a slump. They still have a very, very stacked lineup. Domi Torrent has kind of been shifting with the lineup, Mark. At times they're in a 4-2-3-1. At times they're in a 3-4-1-2 that quickly turns into a 3-4-3 depending on what Maxi Morales is doing. Maxi Morales is still their number 10. They brought in three fantastic attacking players. Herber is their main number 9, and they also have, who's mostly been coming off the bench, Alexander Matrita. He wasn't in the 18 on Sunday, so maybe he's injured. And then Castellanos was their big Argentine acquisition, who's been fantastic. They've got the Scandinavian trio in the form of Alexander Ring, and Anton Timmerhone, who normally patrol things in the midfield. Emerson Imigara is kind of their starter, Dylan Cerner, if that makes sense. Sometimes he's a winger, sometimes he's in the midfield, sometimes he's an outside back. Maxime Cheneau and Alexander Callens are their rocks at the back, and then obviously they've got Sean Johnson, who is the regular backup right now for the U.S. men's national team, behind Zach Steffen on the back line, and a wide player who I am very excited about seeing on Saturday, Mark, Ronald Matarita, who's a very dynamic young player and has kind of been sharing time with Ben Sweat. This is a team with a lot of international flavor, Mark. This is a team that is very dynamic in terms of some of their movement and, you know, is widespread as far as the map and level of experience that they have. And prior to this past week, Domi Torrent really had them playing his system and had transitioned out of Patrick Vieira's system. And, you know, they're in a position where they're going to compete for the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. This is a game that they're going to be looking at wanting to get a result over their opponents, but also one of their first games in a while playing at altitude. What do you see in NYCFC? What do you see in their up and down season, and what do you see in terms of what they can do vis-a-vis the Rapids at the Dick on Saturday?
I think he set it up real well. Maxi Morales, a thing to remember about him is that he might be the smallest player in Major League Soccer. I think he stands 5'1".
Listed at 5'3". I believe Jao Plata is 5'2". So,
ooh. If so, it's a very close battle between the two for shortest player in Major League Soccer. He's been less unbelievably amazing than he was last year, but he's still very, very good. He also missed a lot of time at the beginning of the season with injury. But he's just fantastic on the ball. He's one of those players – I was trying to come up with a term for it during a game that I watched earlier this week, where you get the ball and you dribble away from your defender and your defender follows you and you just dribble in an exact 360 circle. It's not a spin move, but somebody else said that they ought to call it a spin cycle. That's a very Maxi Morales move, where he just dribbles in a way that that the defender doesn't follow him in the proper way. He gets out of position and then he opens up some space for himself and then makes the really good pass. That's a very Maxi Morales kind of thing. The other interesting thing about New York City FC is that Domi Torrent has them playing in something like a 5-2-3, or even a 3-4-3, depending on how you want to look at it. Morales, Castellanos, and Hebert, Mitra, who you mentioned before, will kind of work off of each other up top, with Morales kind of dropping in, although switching off with the other guys. And then you've got Alexander Ring, who's been a spectacular defensive midfielder for them. He can kind of do it all, which is cover a lot of ground and defend, but also he's more of a lane clogger than he is a pure destroyer. So Diego Chara wants to chase down the ball and tackle you mostly. Alexander Ring wants to just find the exact most inconvenient spot to stand in between the lines and then be there. And he's just always there.
So Diego Chara is a linebacker who's going to absolutely light you up. Alexander Ring is the free safety who's going to pick you off and run it back for six.
Right. Or that other linebacker who also drops back and catches interceptions or tips balls off the line. Like he's just a really smart player. And then I think the X factor for me, it's all about central midfielders. I don't know why. I'm just focused on them. Although, you took what I would have said about Matarita, that he's just a fantastic left back to watch, is this new kid, Keaton Parks. Mm-hmm. And I pulled up this wonderful statistic from Dummy Run, who's one of the writers at American Soccer Analysis. They've been running a bunch of different statistics. Keaton Parks is one of the best dribbling midfielders in Major League Soccer and one of the worst passing midfielders in Major League Soccer. And I hope that the Colorado Rapids use that. He turns over the ball statistically, percentage-wise, in the bottom 20% of players at his position. He is just the kind of guy who wants to make the dangerous pass But rather than make the dangerous pass, he's just as likely to make the exceedingly dumb pass that gets his team in trouble. And I hope that Colorado does their due diligence on that and figures out how to collapse on him, cut him off, and exploit his weaknesses. You know, don't let him dribble at you. Stand off him a little bit and let him make bad passes. Then ram him down in their throat and try and get a goal in transition. That would be the way I would approach this game all day long. You know, cover the flanks. Don't let the wide players, Tinnerholm and Matarita, beat you for speed. You know, put Parks under lane cutting pressure and pick your spots. I mean, that would be, and don't let Morales humiliate you with one of those fantastic little dribbles.
No, absolutely. I agree with you, Mark. Whether it's Alexander Ring or the front three, you know, we kind of, we're in a little bit of another Rorschach test situation where we're looking at the formation and trying to figure out what and how NYC is doing it. And I see it as a 3-4-1-2, 3-4-3, and you see it as, you know, a 5-2-3. The point is that there's a lot of motion in here, folks. You know, Maxi Morales is really the only regular one in terms of he's going to be mostly a straight channel runner. He's the dribbly central number 10 who connects things in. But Hebert is going to do a bunch of different things. Castellanos is going to do a bunch of different things. You mentioned maybe some of the limitations that Keaton Park has, but you know, I feel like Alexander Ring is what I think we wanted Jack Price to be in terms of just an all-around solid midfielder and everything. You know, if Alexander Ring was maybe a little bit more seriously taken, you know, for Finland, you know, he would be Finland's Michael Bradley circa, you know, like 2013, for example. And Anton Tinnerholm's probably one of my favorite right backs in the entire league as well. So I think this is going to match up kind of similar to the LAFC game, Mark, other than them not having a Carlos Vela. NYCFC has very much taken up a replacing David Villa, who, you know, did he retire? I think he went to Japan, I think.
He went to Japan.
So, you know, they have it was a central number nine and he was absolutely fantastic. And as opposed to just getting another number nine to fill in that spot, they brought in three other guys and moved some players around so that collectively they're replacing his production. But in that, other than Maxi Morales, there's no one guy who I'm looking at and thinking individually, if Tommy Smith and Lalas Abubakar show up, that, oh crap, that's a really, really bad situation. Whether it's, you know, Kellen Acosta will be back with the team. Obviously, he played almost the 90 minutes against Arsenal, and I spoke with Connor Casey after the match, and he said, you know, this was a good exercise for him not being able to play on Saturday, and the physios, you know, Kellen's young enough to where he's going to be able to play 90 minutes if nothing happens in training on Saturday. So as long as somebody either individually or collectively locks down Maxi Morales, there's no individual matchup up the middle there, whether it's Ring, Hebert, Castellanos, or Matrita, that I'm worried about for any of the individual Rapids defenders. Now, if it's Cole Bassett and Danny Wilson, or if Johan Blomberg has to play 30 minutes in there, I'm a little bit nervous. If it's Kellen Acosta and maybe Jack Price for 60 minutes and then somebody else in there, I'm okay as far as what's going to happen centrally. I think the Rapids are going to let NYCFC have the ball. They're going to frustrate them centrally, and hopefully they tucker out after 60 minutes, given all the minutes on their legs, one less day of rest in terms of MLS competition, and then obviously having to travel across country and play at altitude. But then the next factor for me, Mark, is who wins the battle on the wings. You know, Tinnerholm against Sam Vines, that's a really, really tough matchup. But can Jonathan Lewis ball out to the point where Tinnerholm has to defend a little bit more? And that's a 2v1 situation that the Rapids overall win. And I have to think that if Sam Nicholson's able to start in this one, that Keegan Rosenberry's going to be able to negate Matarita or Ben Sweat enough to where they have to worry about defensive situations there. You know, NYCFC is definitely a win games 3-1, 3-2 situation, and so if the Rapids can be defensively sound and not have critical mistakes that are immediately punished, the Rapids are going to be able to stymie NYCFC on the ball, and then this team's weak enough to where if they have to throw numbers forward, especially with their wingbacks who think that they're wingers, Tinnerholm and Matarita, not so much Ben Sweat, then that's going to leave space for a Jonathan Lewis and Sam Nicholson to be successful, and I have to think Kai Kamara is going to be chomping at the bit to get at Maxine Chanel and Alexander Callens, given that they gave up a goal on a header this past weekend. I think that's advantage Rapids if those two things occur. Channeling, locking down things in the middle of the park and winning individual matchups on the wings. In that, Mark, I like the Rapids to win this one 2-1.
I think the Rapids lose this one 2-0. It just feels like NYCFC are a very clever team and are making things work, and it feels like the Rapids are in a bit of a down spell right now. Not that they're off as a team, but just that they have played a Monday game. They have drawn a game and lost a game preceding that. It just feels like things are a little bit hiccupy. I will add, Matthew, David Villa is playing in the J1 league in Japan for Vissel Kobe. In the 2019 season for the J1 league, Matthew, there are 18 teams in the top division. What place do you think Vissel Kobe is in out of 18 teams?
How far are we into the season?
They are 19 games into a 34-game season.
Okay, so Premier League setup, essentially. I'm going to say Vissel Kobe is mid-table, so the middle third. So somewhere, I guess, between 7th and 12th, if I have that math right.
They would like to be, but they are, alas, not. David Villa has led Vissel Kobe to 15th in an 18-team league.
Are they in relegation then?
They are 4 points clear of relegation
right
now.
Oh, man.
Right, but he has 10 goals in 17 games. So, you could say it's not his fault, but it's kind of amazing. You know, that a couple of years ago he was playing for one of the best teams in the world, and now he's going up against a team called the Sanfrecce Hiroshima or the Nagoya Grampus. I love that, Nagoya Grampus. It sounds like a horror movie. And can't even grind out a win against them. So not looking good for David Villa and Vissel Kobe.
Oh, that's disappointing. And I still think he'd be absolutely fantastic for NYCFC this year. You know, like they're just barely above the red line right now. I'd have to think that they'd be up there, you know, with Philadelphia and New York Red Bulls right now if he was still on the team. But alas, that is not the case for NYCFC, and that is advantage Rapids on that front. Anything on here, Mark, or do we want to go to a very funny Ask HTHL?
Let's do it.
All right. Our one Ask HTHL this week comes from Jen Grieving. Jen, hello. It's been a while since you've spoken to us. And so in response to, I don't know if you saw, Mark, but there was a lot of Twitter hubbub when it was found out that Josh and Stan Kroenke were attendants in the game. There was a banter back and forth, and on one thread, Jen tagged us and used AskHTHL, saying, this week's feature on at Rapids96 podcast, questions the Kroenkes asked during the match, hashtag AskHTHL. Mark, Stan and Josh Kroenke are sitting in the second level at DSG Park. They are watching a soccer game for the first time in a while for probably both of them. What questions are they asking anybody else around them, or maybe technical support from either of the two teams, or maybe one of their accountants who's just checking to see how much money Arsenal can make them without them spending a dime this summer?
Well, that's the first one. You've got that one. The other one that I would say is they'd ask the same question I've heard from fans sitting behind me in section 109 many, many times when they were at their first Rapids game ever, which is, so explain offsides to me again. And then I say, first of all, it's offside, not offsides. And then at that point, I think Stan Kroenke would probably turn to whoever he was talking to and say, you're fired, get out of my stadium. The other question that occurred to me as a possibility for Stan Kroenke is that he would probably walk down the concourse and say, where are the stairs? Where is the elevator? Which way is the bathroom? Which team belongs to me? You know, like just some basic questions, which blew my mind. The fact that I think the original cost of DSGP was something like $165 million. You can Google that for me while I keep rambling. But it was, you know, it was a lot of money. And I think, as far as I know, Stan Kroenke has probably been there twice, once for the stadium's opening and once on Monday. And think about, Matt, how amazing it is that a person would be so rich that they'd own an entire sports stadium and only have been there twice in 10 years and be totally unaware of how to get around. Like, where's the bathroom is probably the most important question that Stan ever asked at the game. All right, Matt, what do you think Stan and Josh asked at the ball game?
First of all, the total construction cost in 2019 dollars corrected for inflation was $64.5 million.
Ooh,
so I think you were over by almost a factor of two.
Yeah, I should not. You should not pay. You should not hire me to build your soccer stadium, because I will overestimate concrete costs by double at least.
Yeah. And so, you know, I want to say I'd want to say it's order of magnitude $200 million these days. That sounds about right for what LAFC paid for their stadium in Atlanta or Minnesota as well. So I think finances is probably the first big question for me, Mark. Not just in general, but especially given what was the one in Stan Kroenke's entire ownership of Arsenal Football Club, you know, up until, you know, last season now, they had Arsene Wenger, and if nothing else, you could guarantee that Arsene Wenger was going to get you top four in the Premier League, that got you a bunch more money and into Champions League, and that he was going to get you through the group stage of said Champions League. So no matter how little money was spending or how much fans were complaining about, you know, Arsene out or everything, or, oh, I'm tired, like, win something besides the FA Cup or the League Cup for, you know, once in a while, is that no matter what you gave Arsene Wenger, he was absolutely consistent in terms of the revenue streams. And that's something that we're starting to see with the lower tier of the big six in the Premier League. You know, you mentioned the box suites and everything and how much money was actually spent, Mark. When I did my trip to the Fulham game and everything, and I toured Stamford Bridge, we got to go see up at the suite level for the standard suites at Stamford Bridge. Do you want to guess what an entire year's worth, like renting out an entire box at the corporate level at Stamford Bridge, what that costs you?
$1 billion.
Not $1 billion. It's going into the season, depending on the box, it varied depending on how close to the end line or midfield you were, was average about £2 million for the entire, and that's just for the regular season league game. So for the 17 Premier League regular season games, it was that much. And then depending on, you could add stuff or rent it out extra. I don't remember. There wasn't an actual figure for just getting it for every single event at the stadium, Chelsea first team, all competition or otherwise, but just for the 17 games, £2 million. And then the middle one was free for Roman Abramovich because he was the owner, and he, over the course of his entire ownership of the club, has attended approximately 90% of Chelsea home games in all competitions. So that shows you where he stands as far as his ownership. But, you know, Arsenal hasn't spent a lot of money, Mark, and Unai Emery did not get them into the Champions League. They're into Europa this year. So I think, especially with, you know, the fan letter, and then the Kroenkes had a response to that, I saw maybe yesterday or 2 days ago, you know, the question of how much money do we need to put into the club for this transfer window for the upcoming season? Can Unai Emery's system work to the point where the club is successful enough to maybe make another run at Europa Cup? They obviously lost to their bitter crosstown London rivals Chelsea in the finals. And can they get back into Champions League and be sustainable in Champions League? Kroenke might not be asking technical questions of how Emery wants to work and whether or not that works with the right team and the right funding in the Champions League. But ultimately, if nothing else from a financial investment, he knew, I don't have to spend a whole lot of money. Fans are going to complain, but Wenger's going to get me top four. That's guaranteed cash. And he's going to get me through to the knockout rounds of Champions League. That's guaranteed cash. And now they kind of had a question of, they don't have that stability. How much money do I have to invest in order to guarantee those revenue streams? Are those revenue streams even guaranteed? We haven't had to consistently fire and rehire managers and buy them out and everything. So there hasn't been a lot of burn rate, but now those revenue streams aren't as consistent. So I think he might have been wondering about that in the context of the season. And obviously there's a bunch of hubbub about some of the Arsenal stars that you could speak better than I could, Mark. But, you know, if nothing else, I think he's asking financial questions. Whether or not he's asking that about the Rapids or anything, probably not, given how much money they're spending. That's probably a question that he, or at least Stan, is going to have to deal with Porik once the head coach get hired and they go into the off season, and there's questions about level of funding, transfer fee, total, you know, investment from a contract and an acquisition standpoint for the DP. But I'd still guess that most of the questions are financial. He probably doesn't care about the game as a whole, you know, other than the fact that Lacazette didn't get hurt, and, you know, Axel Schuberg didn't need to get hurtled literally into the sun for injuring one of Uncle Stan's favorite Gunner assets.
Yeah, I mean, I want to hop on what you said. I hate hopping on what you said in the final 10 minutes of our – in the final minute of an hour and 10-minute podcast, because I feel like most of our listeners have by far gone to bed at this point, or their kids have already begged them to turn off this boring podcast. But and also it's off topic for a Rapids podcast. But I think you're right in the sense of Kroenke asking a lot of financials questions. I think maybe you're overly hopeful about how much Stan Kroenke cares about how much Danny Wilson makes this year, in that I don't think he cares about individual contracts. One criticism that a lot of Arsenal fans have right now, the running joke in Premier League circles is that Arsenal are not spending any money on the transfer window at all. No major players have been purchased, that everybody else is, you know, gearing up for the big, you know, difficult season, and Arsenal have done absolutely nothing. And it just looks like Uncle Stan is very happy with a moderately expensive, but not too expensive, sixth place finisher. And that it's hurting the Arsenal legacy. The same could be said for the Colorado Rapids in that, you know, you run the team with an eye towards, you know, neutrality or balance, and profitability is not something you super worry about. You just buy it, you hold it, and then you hope that the team continues, the value of the franchise continues to appreciate. And what you don't want to do is overspend on things like designated players or a very expensive, splashy team that busts the budget, or overspending on too many staff that work for the team. The Rapids, as have been mentioned in a number of soccer articles, have a smaller scouting staff and a smaller front office staff than many other Major League Soccer teams. And so there are concerns about whether, for fans, whether the team is spending enough money to be a top flight team in MLS. For Kroenke, the opposite concern is there, I think, which is there are concerns for him that the team may spend too much money, dig in too much debt, which it probably functionally, financially doesn't make a lot of sense for them to get into, considering the franchise value will appreciate regardless. He just wants to lose the least money. And potentially, you know, winning is a bonus, but not necessarily the most important thing to Stan Kroenke. That being said, a smart GM, good players, and a smart, successful coach with what they've been given in either MLS or in the EPL should be capable of winning the league.
Well said, Mark. Listeners, follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard. Check out our words on the Rapids at the Denver Post and lastwordonsoccer.com. Hit us up collectively on Twitter at Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL. If you've got something that's longer than 280 characters or want to get in touch on a different level, Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. I'm checking that daily. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. As mentioned before, we're on iHeartRadio now. DenverPost.com/HTHL if you want a special deal on the Denver Post digital content, and Patreon.com/Rapids96Podcast if you believe that our mindless drivel about all matters bring you any monetary value. With that, listeners, we'll see you next week.
Amazing, Matt.